Yes, do have one later on, but see whether it's gluten-free. Last week, Michelle Colgrave at the Edith Cowan University talked about her work on crops and gluten, and we discussed how CRISPR and other genetic techniques could help.
Because of the complexity of the proteins that exist in these grains, so I've mentioned that there's over 100 in wheat, there's 50 or so in barley, the type of technology such as CRISPR may not see value in that because you have to make so many changes to be able to remove all of the proteins that could cause harm in those people who are sensitive. But there are other applications where you could see benefits. So you can introduce proteins or enzymes that may end up producing a product out of that grain or oil that's going to have significant health benefits. If we can introduce a small change into a food commodity, it can have immense health benefits and then economic savings by reducing chronic disease, then I see that there's huge benefit.
You're also looking for other proteins in the wild. How do you go about that? Because the wild's a big place.
Yes, we have an approach we call bioprospecting. So looking at the biological diversity that exists in nature. We think that nature is incredibly powerful and we can learn a lot of lessons from nature. It has already spent millions of years evolving peptides and proteins that have huge health benefits or can be bioactive in certain ways. So what we do is when we find a particular peptide or protein that can be beneficial, we look at the close relatives of those plants or animals that they may have come from, because we believe that there's more chance of seeing other similar but highly valuable proteins and peptides that might be within those.
And what do you do with them? You bring them in and see whether you can add them to the crops or something?
We can extract them from nature themselves. So if it's in a commodity like a crop where they're going to be produced at fairly high levels, the obvious thing is to just extract out those incredible bioactive proteins. Or the other option is that we can actually have something like yeast that's been used for thousands of years to make them. So you can have this organism make proteins at will. So once you know what they are and what their sequence is, they can be essentially delivered through a biotechnological process.
Professor Michelle Colgrave in Perth. But what about beer, I hear you cry. What's that got to do with it?
Is there gluten in beer?
There absolutely is. Beer is primarily made from malted barley, and so barley being an ingredient, it contains gluten, and of course the Germans love their Weissbier, which is wheat-based as well, so those will also contain gluten.
Have you managed to get gluten out of beer?
Using barley, it's called Kabari, we've managed to produce a beer that is gluten-free by the WHO recommendation. But there are also other beers that exist that are made from other crops like millet or teff or sorghum or even corn. Those ones don't have the flavour that you get from that characteristic sort of barley malt, so they're not as palatable.
So they're not as popular?
I would say so, that's right. There are some that are quite good, but they have a distinct flavour that's not what the beer drinker would be used to.
What about the frothy bit? Does protein affect that?
Yeah, you'd be surprised to know that protein's in almost every part of beer. So when you think about haze that you might see, that cloudy look, that's protein polyphenol complexes. When you think about the foam and how long that foam stays on your beer, that's due to protein-protein interactions as well. So you've got flavour, you've got mouthfeel, you've got the foam and haze stability, all of that protein has a role.
And when you say mouthfeel, how do people say that beer feels differently in their mouths?
Well, I guess if you were to consider drinking a crisp lager, a summer-style lager, you would get that refreshing, more watery taste. Whereas if you're going to go to an English bitter or a dark ale, you could get those chocolate flavours, but you also get the more sticky mouthfeel around those.
Do you like beer yourself?
Well, I'm Australian, so it goes to say, and also an ex-rugby player, so I wouldn't be in the role without liking beer.
Rugby, which position?
Oh, many, but I played most of my time at scrum half in the end.
That's very interesting. You're reasonably short and of course, terribly wiry and move around. But going back to the beer, what stage has it reached in terms of getting gluten-free so that it's stable? In other words, there's some doubt about whether you can test for gluten and say it's gluten-free when in fact isn't quite?
What happens is many of the manufacturers have gone to nature and found an enzyme that's present in fungi. They've used that enzyme as an additive. It was initially used to actually remove the haze, so most people don't want a cloudy beer. They realised that in reducing and removing that haze, what it did was it broke down these protein polyphenol complexes, but it also was noted to break down gluten. The problem, however, is that when you break down the gluten, it was essentially masking the site that the test would normally detect. So by adding the enzyme, they were able to produce a beer that the test said contained no gluten, but in fact, the body was still seeing the gluten. So we developed alternative technology using mass spectrometry, and that enabled us to directly measure the gluten that was present. And we were able to show that that gluten that existed in these gluten-reduced beers was still going to be potentially harmful. And that's what the evidence also suggests from the clinical research, where people with celiac disease were still responding negatively to these gluten-reduced beers.
Can you solve that problem?
To solve that problem, what you need to do is start with a gluten-free material. So that's where the barley was super useful, because we knew that as a source material that it was going to be gluten-free. And we know that gluten's also reduced during brewing, just the process itself removes some of it. So if you start with a clean material, then you're going to end up with a clean product.
Cheers.
Yes, indeed.
The rugby-playing professor at Edith Cowan University in Perth, Michelle Colgrave, where she heads molecular analysis at CSIRO as well.